Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, December 18th, 2009 in Oakland, California. I'm CNET's Tom Merritt.
And from San Francisco, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from the offices downtown in San Francisco, I'm Roger Chang for Techzilla.
Google wants to buy Yelp, y'all. This seems like it might be a smart acquisition. Google Neighborhood, where Google asked people to put QR codes on their windows, is already out there. So why wouldn't Google let Yelp get in on that action? Well, not let them, but get them in on that action by buying them.
Yeah, I know that Google is certainly interested in this market. I think Yelp made, what was the last number, about $300 million as of last year. And even if Google wants to build its own Yelp competitor, the fact that Yelp already has all of this data makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm hearing up to $500 million for this deal, which would be pretty high. So obviously, Google values Yelp's data quite a bit.
Yeah, and I guess with what TechCrunch is saying, $30 million of revenue, Google probably feels like it's a decent bet. Google has a lot of cash. I think the thing that concerns me is how big do we want Google to be? It's been interesting to watch the company move beyond search, and a lot of that's been really fun, like Gmail. But now we're hearing rumors about Google making a netbook. We have the Nexus One. Now Yelp. I mean, where does it end?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'm a Yelp user. I enjoy Yelp. I even enjoy the people that complain on Yelp regularly. That's part of the fun of it. And it would be interesting to see what Yelp would be bundled into Google. Does it stay as a standalone service? Does it get wiped out completely and turns into, I don't know, a bunch of Google search results? It's hard to say.
Well, you know, it's interesting to say search results because I'm wondering if you search for anything like a store or a restaurant or, mm-hmm. or any kind of entertainment, do you automatically get a Yelp review at the top of your list or near the top of your list along with
that's whatever. Basically what they want to do with places and Google Neighborhood. So, yeah, of course you would. That seems to make sense. They would just kind of incorporate it. The other question is, would it still be called Yelp or would it be called Places? You know, would they merge it into an existing product?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Yelp brand is pretty strong, but Google has a history of wanting to change names of companies that it acquires.
Do you think they'll try to harmonize the Yelp? For example, I have a Yelp account. And I also have a Gmail account. Do you think they'll try to harmonize those two where they become under? Are you going to be logging in into a separate, account?
Yeah. I mean, when Yahoo buys stuff, you generally see the Yahoo login become the way you log in. I would assume that that's what Google would do as well. The other question is, are they actually going to get it? We all thought they were going to get Lala, and that didn't happen. They did buy AdMob, which is just, again, making them bigger and bigger in the advertising business as well. So it'll be interesting to watch. Microblogging site Twitter got hacked by a group of protesters calling themselves the Iranian Cyber Army. Twitter went offline for more than an hour overnight. Visitors were redirected to a page declaring this site has been hacked by the Iranian Cyber Army. And the United States thinks they control and manage internet access, but they don't. That was the message. This is a group of hackers, whether they're actually from Iran or not, kind of doesn't matter to me. It points out that DNSSEC needs to be implemented. We need better DNS security, because that's how they replaced this. They didn't hack into Twitter. They hijacked the domain.
Yeah, when I saw the fail whale last night, I thought, well, it's just, you know, too many people on Twitter. Same old same. But this is interesting. Twitter getting hacked, because of course it's so popular right now. Of course, this is going to be a target for lots of folks. Are we going to see more of these types of things? Can the company clamp down on something like this before it really gets out of control and somebody does get into Twitter itself?
I don't think there's any evidence that Twitter is vulnerable. I mean, the only vulnerabilities you hear about, like Rick Sanchez getting hacked, are phishing attacks where you trick someone into giving you access. So I feel like Twitter is pretty safe. It's only a couple of years old, right? So it's probably not 100% bulletproof. But this being a DNS hijack makes me much more concerned about the DNS infrastructure than it has me concerned about Twitter.
I'm not so much a concern, but more of an academic pondering. Like, does this imply that Twitter is becoming big enough and high profile enough for people to kind of see it as a target in order to carry a message or some sort of, you know, politicization of the medium in order to, because, you know, as I guess it has such a huge reach, even from a couple of years ago.
Hey, Twitter's made it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Like, I mean, is that what that
finally
means?
Arrived. It's important. I don't have to explain to people why they might want to use Twitter. You can just say, look, it's important enough for hacker groups to hijack its domain name.
Are you going to see environmentalists try to hang their digital version of like a protest banner off a bridge on Twitter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to explain to my family and my non-technical friends what Twitter is and how it works and how it's not just about what I had for lunch, although it is a lot of that. But yeah, this definitely points to the people who have access to these kinds of tools and want to make mischief, if not worse, are starting to see Twitter as a place that enough people have gathered and have information and things to say, and other people be listening to that information. It seems like the company better get it together soon.
Well, you know who else has to get it together? Buggy software. The National Vulnerability Database has issued their list of the buggiest software in the land based on reported vulnerabilities. And the winner for the second year in a row is Firefox.
Aw, congrats.
102 bugs, up from 90 last year.
I mean, are any of us surprised?
Well, yeah. Hold on.
Firefox discloses all of them, so
exactly.
Doesn't mean it's the buggiest. It means it's the most transparent about what's going on.
I you know, that's great. I still use Chrome because every time I launch Firefox, my CPU on my little laptop starts to overheat, and I hear the fans spin all the way up.
Yeah, well, good luck with those secret bugs that Google isn't reporting. For you. 102 bugs, up from 90 last year. I think we can all agree, though, that Adobe Reader deserves to take second place, beating out Microsoft this year. As a Foxit Reader user myself, I say, whoever would use Adobe Reader?
It's just a
vector for disease.
I've never seen another application so bloated that offered such a small set of features.
Well, and apparently very insecure.
And this is from a not open piece of software. And before you Apple people get too smug, Apple QuickTime took third place.
Ah, QuickTime, QuickTime. I remember that. Ugh.
I remember like QuickTime is the days of yore.
It was. Remember, we used to use it all the time at SF State when we were learning how to desktop video edit.
Still going strong.
Yeah. I never use it. I don't really know what I would use it for. But I think I commend Firefox for, because again, like you said, Tom, it's open source, and so that's just the way these things go. If there's a vulnerability, well, you hear about it on Firefox. So I think that more companies who clearly are not going to disclose every bug that they find internally, right? And very rarely even congratulate somebody, maybe an outside researcher who has found something that that the company then patches and we all move on. That doesn't really happen all that often. You don't really hear about what's going on internally and how things are getting fixed. So I wish more companies acted the way Firefox is.
If you're wondering where Internet Explorer and Chrome are on this list, they're not on it because users of their software have patches installed automatically. So that's something I'd like to see come to Firefox, to be honest, is automatic updates. And a shout out to the folks at Skype, Yahoo IM, and AIM. None of them are on the list this year, although all three were on last year.
Yeah, well, Yahoo IM, I don't use it. I'm an AIM user, definitely. I use Skype every so often, kind of to talk to friends and family who are overseas. But if I'm on AIM, I would like it to be as strong as possible.
See, I use Trillian, and Trillian is on this list, so maybe I should switch to the actual clients.
I used Trillian when I was still using a PC, but now that I've switched over to Mac OS, I'm
so Adium.
Yeah, it's Adium because of Domoko.
And thank you to GameSpot for forcing me to move over to AIM because that's what the company uses.
Yeah, I think I was. What was I on? I think we mostly are using AIM. People are kind of all over the place at CNET, though. Yahoo Instant Messenger was the big tech TV one, I remember. Hey, the Blu-ray Disc Association has released its finalized 3D specs this morning, outlining what you can expect out of 3D Blu-ray next year.
This is the future.
Full 1080p resolution, backward compatibility for both 3D Blu-ray players and 3D Blu-ray discs, and the use of the new MVC codec, which is an extension of the existing AVC 3D. And the PS3 is not only going to support 3D gaming by 2011, but it will also support 3D Blu-ray playback.
That machine is amazing. Can do anything. Play your Blu-rays, play games.
Well, I mean, I think the PS3 probably is the best Blu-ray player you can buy if you can afford it. It's not the cheapest one, right? But
definitely not the cheapest.
But certainly, the fact that the PS3 is in the spec for this, I think is certainly positive.
I mean, even according to Robert Herron, it's still considered the kind of benchmark. That's the one you benchmark against in terms of Blu-ray performance.
Now, I've been saying for a long time that I feel like streaming is going to make the Blu-ray battle irrelevant. And I feel like I'm being proven wrong more and more. So do we feel like 3D is going to make Blu-ray more popular? Is it going to, because that's something that's going to be really hard to deliver over streaming. Is that going to be the thing that keeps Blu-ray in the game?
I want to say so, but at the same time, as someone who has to wear prescription eyewear, those glasses, I mean, just to get ones that fit my face and over my glasses, well, still haven't found that magic one. And, I don't know why. I just think that having to wear an extra pair of glasses over my glasses, I mean, I love 3D, but I don't know.
I still find it to be, it gives me a little bit of motion sickness. I don't wear glasses, but I feel for you, Roger, because who would want to wear glasses over glasses? And you need your actual glasses. You can't see anything anyway. I don't know. I know that 3D over streaming is that's a pipe dream, at least right now. But I'm not so crazy about physical media. I know that they're the Blu-ray loyal, faithful people out there. I know. And you can't beat those specs in terms of quality, video quality. The 3D stuff, I don't know. It seems like a passing fad.
I don't know. I go down to Best Buy and I see them with all the new 3D capable TVs all lined up near the front with little signs telling you what an amazing 3D capable feed, though.
But how much content is actually going to be in 3D to the point where you would buy a 3D capable TV and feel like you paid more for a good reason?
You know,
3D is just going to come with every TV, though. So at some point, people are just going to get used to it being in there. Whether they buy the TV to have 3D, it just will be there.
Right.
One good bellwether is always to see what kinds of creation hardware you can, like, in other words, video cameras, editing software, and stuff like that. You're beginning to see a lot of kind of prosumer level 3D video cameras. So it tells me that someone thinks that 3D is here to stay.
Well, yeah, the people who are making all that 3D equipment. Bing and get sued. Bing Information Design in St. Louis, Missouri, has sued Microsoft Corp for trademark infringement in the St. Louis City Circuit Court, asserting unfair competition, trademark infringement, and tortious interference. It's a small privately held information graphics and multimedia design company, but they claim that Microsoft's use of Bing is causing confusion.
Yeah. Well, now Bing Information Design has been around since 2000, I believe.
Right.
So, Microsoft Bing, pretty new.
It's been around 9 years. Bing's only been around a couple of years.
And let's be honest, there is no way that Microsoft did not realize that Bing Information Design existed. It just doesn't think that Bing Information Design was big enough to be able to fight it. This is Microsoft we're talking about. So whether or not the company, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what happened within Microsoft, but I'm going to bet that they were like, let them take us to court. We'll just settle and continue on our way.
Well, Kevin Kutz, a spokesman for Microsoft, told the St. Louis Business Journal, we do not believe there is any confusion in the marketplace. And I have to tend to agree. I don't think anyone is going to Bing the search it. Well, I don't think anyone's going to Bing the search engine, but I don't think anyone's going to the search engine and saying, wait a minute, I'm going to get all of my graphic and multimedia design in the St. Louis area done at this search engine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the confusion that the company is claiming, though, right?
It's
I don't know. Maybe you're searching on Google for an alternative browser and you type in Bing.
Realistically, I don't think this is about people confusing the Bing, their Bing services.
With it's the about Bing maybe the information
But it has to be. It has
folks.
To be to convince a yeah. judge, right?
Oh, no, I'm totally aware of that.
So they must think they have enough of a case that they can get a judge to at least admit the case to court, which then might make Microsoft give them a settlement and pay them off to go away. But I imagine Microsoft is probably not going to want to set that precedent. So I wouldn't expect that they'll get the money out of Microsoft. But they certainly got some press out of it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's
They probably would get farther if Bing wasn't already a word that people use. You know, it's kind of Bing. I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's even a real word, but it's not like
Bing cherries,
like Bing Crosby.
Something that was made up or spelled weird, then they'd really have a case.
Is it named after a guy named Bing, the graphic design company, I mean?
Was it started by Bing Crosby? Maybe it was. Is he from St. Louis?
Yeah.
Maybe they should just change their name of the company to Crosby.
Well, no, they're not going to give up. They want to fight this to the end,
They
want to
fight this until it somehow bears fruit.
They should call themselves Bling Information Design because we make great graphics.
So you remember a couple of years ago when we talked about the Netflix data set that they put out with anonymized information. And we've talked about the fact that anonymity had been broken, mostly because you can take things like zip code, birth date, gender, and it's been shown that there's a chance for you to figure out who someone is, even though it doesn't have their name on it. In fact, the famous thing was a Blockbuster data set revealing an 87% chance that a person could be uniquely identified just from zip code, birth date, and gender. Well, an in-closet lesbian mother is suing Netflix, alleging the movie rental company made it possible for her to be outed when it disclosed insufficiently anonymous information about a half a million of their customers as part of that $1 million Netflix prize.
Now, and that is because of her viewing habits, and she obviously has gone through some hardship because of this. That was what Netflix was allowing people to see?
Well, Netflix was allowing you to see viewing habits of anonymized users. Just had a number, right?
Yeah.
She's saying that you can look at the data that they put in this data set and figure out it's her and figure out that she's a lesbian.
But how can they do that with when the viewing her viewing history is anonymized?
Well, the viewing history being a bunch of movies that are generally loved by lesbians would be the way to tell that the user was a lesbian.
Right.
Zip code. Maybe she lives in a very sparsely populated zip code.
Sure.
Birth. If there's a birth date or, you know, gender. It is.
Wow.
I mean, again, this is going back to that Blockbuster data. You don't need that much information to start ruling.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Putting out possibilities and narrowing it down to you get an 87% chance that you can say, yep, pretty sure I know who that is.
This is, well, you know, the this particular case aside, it sets a very dangerous tone for all sorts of things. People being able to find other people on social networks without them actually being friends, or I don't know, you know, advertisers being able to target people based on very simple, what we think of as very simple information, like my gender, my zip code, maybe, you know, a couple things that I might have clicked on in the past and you can find me kind of thing. I don't really know what it means, but I don't like the sound of it.
Yeah. And so the lawsuit is being led by Joseph Malley, who recently reached a multi-million dollar settlement with Facebook over its Beacon program, which was sharing users' Blockbuster rentals. So the question is whether Netflix should have known their data set would have anonymity. But it sounds like she's got a high quality lawyer to fight in her side. You can buy the Esquire magazine on your phone.
Now, this is a little okay. So,
it's an app, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get an iPhone right away. I waited, you know, about a year, but I have one now, and I don't know. I mean, they're so small. I don't want to read a magazine on my iPhone. That just sounds like it's going to hurt my head. I think it's interesting that Esquire is trying to push back on this whole, you know, FUD about the magazine industry going away because everybody's gone digital. But is the iPhone really the answer to this?
I don't think so either. So it's $2.99 to get the app, and that gets you whatever the current issue is. And then through in-app purchases on the iPhone, you can buy future issues. So it's not like you're like having to buy a new app every month.
Right.
And, you know, it does some fun stuff. Makes it easy to scroll through different articles. You look for visual or textual indicators. But I'm with you. I actually do read comics and books on my phone, but I prefer to read them on my Kindle. I prefer to read the comics, or at least the books. I prefer, well, with the comics, it's more of a matter of convenience versus preference, right? It's the fact that I can do it means I'll read a comic that I might not bother to go out and get otherwise. But I don't know that I would buy a magazine.
No.
I don't know that I'm dying for a magazine. I could just go to the web, right?
The form factor would just have to be much bigger. You'd have to have something that is, I don't know. For me, I read plenty of magazines on the web, but my desktop monitors, you know,
would it make more sense inches. To be like on a Kindle or a tablet something?
No, I love reading newspapers on the Kindle. That's one of the things I loved about the original Kindle is like I can read, you know, the Oakland Tribune on it.
So, yeah, I'm still on a BlackBerry. So, yeah, I mean, my opinion isn't too weighted here.
Yeah, I mean,
it seems like a fun experiment by Esquire. Sure. And somebody in a conference room was like, let's get crazy here. Let's just, you know, we're going to get a lot of attention because they're not the first magazine to try to do this, the first publication, but it is Esquire. And it, when you look at the numbers, you think, okay, well, if somebody was very compelled to consume Esquire on their iPhone, the pricing is not unreasonable. But I don't know how many other magazines might follow suit. Just don't see it.
Yeah, I think I need a little more than 3.5-4 inches of display space. And at that point, I'm just going to use my laptop. I don't mind reading an article in a web browser on the iPhone, but I'm not paying for that, right?
Right. No.
And I can save that and look at it on my desk on my laptop later if I want. Yeah. I don't know about that. Reuters saying that the Pentagon has closed a security breach that would have allowed insurgents to hack into data feeds from drone aircraft that provide real-time video of war zones. This is after a report in the Wall Street Journal showing Shiite fighters in Iraq using software to intercept the video feeds and let them monitor U.S. military operations. So it was being exploited.
Oh, great. Now we got to deal with drones getting breached. What's next? It's so
Sarah, we don't have to deal with them being breached anymore. They fixed it.
Well, that's good. But I thought that their response was a little flippant. Like, this is an old story. We fixed that a long time ago. Okay, well, you did. There was an issue in the beginning. And what kind of information do people have now about the military in highly covert situations?
And, you know, what's interesting is part of this is because the feeds aren't encrypted because they didn't expect anyone to be looking.
Encrypt all the things.
Yes. This is one of those times where people just kind of assumed a certain level of sophistication that people wouldn't have to be able to hack it. But you know what? That was maybe 8 years ago, and technology has progressed, and it's gotten cheap enough for a lot of people to make it more acceptable to a lot more people.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to expect the U.S. military to come out and announce without provocation that they had a vulnerability, because that's announcing to the enemy that they can hijack your stuff. So you just don't say anything about it at all. Only the fact that the Wall Street Journal brought this to light is why the military is even responding to it.
Yeah, and I do want to make clear that this wasn't an instance of someone controlling the drone, but rather taking the video feed information that flows back and just siphoning it.
And, well, that's not worth anything anymore because conditions have changed.
Well, and as drones continue to not only be, you know, something that consumers are interested in, but obviously defense departments are interested in. Okay, well, this particular drone security breach has been fixed. If we believe that's true, great. We can all move on. Are they going to use, is the drone going to be using the same software? Is it going to be the same company making all the same drones for the military going forward? It seems like we're going to get more and more competition from various companies, especially those who have contracts with the U.S. government. And I certainly hope that the future drones are a lot safer.
All right. Here's a way to make some movie, folks. I said movie, but I meant money, but it's money with a movie. A producer from Uruguay made a science fiction film on YouTube, ended up with a ton of emails and a film deal with Sam Raimi's Ghost House worth $300 million.
Dang.
Panic Attack was uploaded on Thursday. By Monday, Hollywood studios were all over Alvarez. Fede Alvarez to develop and direct a film based on one of his ideas.
This is a pretty cool little clip. I think he did a majority, if not all, the animation himself, and it's pretty cool. Like, if you want to see something attack the capital of Uruguay, that would be it. I mean,
well, this is going to end up being the way movies are made. I can tell this already.
Is this the new reel? Instead of having a reel of all your accomplishments, this is like my demo reel. I'm just going to blurt it out there on something.
Yeah, this is the beauty of YouTube.
Well, and it just goes to show you who is watching YouTube. Well, clearly Hollywood studios and people who want to partner with extremely smart people who aren't already in the industry, or at least are less visible in the industry. Alvarez, he got enough attention that it's kind of like YouTube can be a place where you can get a job if you get enough attention. I mean, he got lucky.
Like Star Search online. You put your talent there and everyone can see it. It's interesting because back in the late 90s, remember the 90s? It was often said that a lot of producers would go to Comic-Cons and book fairs and other events in order to see if they could find any kind of story worth translating or adapting for the larger screen. And this might be just the next logical step where people are going to YouTube and seeing, like, hey, who has a really cool sci-fi idea of aliens?
This is the cool thing about YouTube. It democratizes content creation. And that's why you're seeing so many people flooding into it. And this sort of thing is going to happen more often. We're going to see more people using it and uploading lots of different kinds of stories there. It's really, really fun to watch.
Yeah,
I also think it's sorry, Roger. I feel like most kind of serious creators use Vimeo, so I wonder why YouTube was chosen in this situation. Yeah, maybe it's just the platform he likes better. But Vimeo is like well known for kind of those kind of flashy reels type of thing.
I think a lot of people do both, though. Like they go on Vimeo for the professional presentation, but they also are uploading their content to YouTube.
Because
Vimeo doesn't have nearly the amount of eyes on it.
There's more eyeballs on
YouTube.
Hey, speaking of eyeballs, we want your eyeballs to participate in our forum and your fingers, too. Submit stories and talk about them there. And you can also do it in our IRC chat room as well. And we love getting your email. Let's check out the mailbag.
Angry Andy, that's what he calls himself, says, for years now, I've heard you explain that DRM only punishes the honest customers. Well, today I was such an honest customer for the last time. I went to see Avatar at my local Cineplex, saw a huge crowd standing in the lobby, and I knew something was up. The theater manager explained that the premiere screening of the 3D version could not commence. They'd been waiting for the digital key to arrive that's necessary to decrypt the film. It should have arrived by email from Fox over 4 hours earlier, but it had not. Apparently, this was a problem for every movie theater in Germany and probably every cinema in Europe that wanted to show the film that day. The 2D version, not affected, by the way. Andy says, I gather 50% of all the perplexed visitors had no idea what kind of key he was talking about, but definitely 100% were pissed and had no understanding why they made it all the way and the effort to come to the movie theater only to be told, sorry, we don't want your money. Andy says, the 16th of December, 2009, that was the day he went to see Avatar, was supposed to be the day I saw a masterpiece. Turned out to be the day I swore to never set foot in a movie theater again. Screw you, Fox. And happy downloading.
Gee, it's almost like they punished an honest customer and turned them into a dishonest customer as a result.
Well, Andy, I feel your anger.
You know, we talked about Chrome OS and whether it could get in trouble in the EU. because it's only a browser. And of course, Microsoft is being required to provide that browser ballot in the EU. We had one person ask why it's okay for Apple to only have its own browser, Safari, on the iPhone. But then we had Hoylenwolf recommend a couple of points that differentiates Chrome OS from Microsoft Windows. Windows runs proprietary closed source code, whereas Chrome OS can be built and customized from open source code, from Chromium OS. A competing browser vendor is free to put their own browser in the place of the Chrome browser and reuse the existing kernel and underlying code within the restrictions of the license. The Microsoft Windows OS is itself a platform for running applications. By contrast, the Chrome browser is the sole app that runs on Chrome OS, and the Chrome browser is the platform, not the operating system. So I thought that was pretty well explained. Thank you, Hoylenwolf, for that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, everybody, for writing in. And thanks to everybody who supports us. We love doing the show. If we're lucky, we'll be doing this in another 5 years.
Oh, my gosh. I hope so. You could support us directly on PayPal by going to the address dailytechnewsshow.com/support. And please peruse our fine selection of DTNS stuff at dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. If you want to join us live, your connection's strong enough anyway, we're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 21:30 UTC, and you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
See you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
You have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.